Good morning, Commissioner Jensen, Commissioners, Secretary Hepler. This morning I'm going to go over a couple things. I'm going to talk about an update to the Canada Goose Management Plan as far as where we sit right now in implementation, and then I'm going to do a little summary of our migratory bird banding for the year as well. So, for those of you listening, I'm Rocco Morano, South Dakota Game Fish and Parks Senior Waterfall Biologist. So, the current plan was adopted in 2016 and is operational through 2020, so next year will be the last operational year of this update, and we'll be looking, I'm assuming, to update it again. As you can see, we had a really diverse suite of stakeholders and actually had a really good process in this management plan generation. Had really good buy-in from a very diverse group of folks, and I was very pleased with how it went. We always have an overarching goal with these management plans, and this is no different. You know, the Game Fish and Parks will manage giant Canada geese in the state for maximum recreational opportunity consistent with the welfare of populations, habitat constraints, and social tolerance. These birds can be quite prolific and can cause some issues, so we try to manage those to provide opportunity while also, you know, not having so many geese around that they're causing undue problems. So we manage Canada geese in the state in an objective range between 115 and 165,000 geese, and in this iteration of the plan that range was increased to better reflect the reality of how fine a scale we can actually manage this population. It was a very narrow range in the past, and you couldn't hit that target very easily, no matter how you tried. So, and the objective was also increased, also to better reflect, you know, the opportunity issue with hunters, and because the population objective in the past was in the 50,000 bird range, and at that level you really would have a lot of issues with opportunity for hunters as well. And that population objective is based on a three-year running average from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife May Breeding Population Habitat Survey that's done every May. And here's where we sit right now. As you can see, in 2019, the actual index itself this year was 188,823, which was up 30% from the 2018 estimate of 144,000 and change. Puts the three-year average just over objective. So as you can see in this graph, for the last several years, we were within objective. We're about 1,000 birds over currently with this last three-year average calculation. The difference between this plan and some other population objectives is it actually takes, which we'll go over here in a little bit, is it takes 2 years above objective to trigger a regulatory change, which you'll see here in a minute. Just to show you the current harvest strategy map as far as units go. Most of the state is still Unit 1. The river and some of the outlying areas are Unit 2, which is a later season. And then if you notice, there's a small kind of enclave of Unit 2 around Sioux Falls, and that's to target the urban and suburban birds around Sioux Falls, which I'll go over here in a little bit as well. But Objective 2 provides maximum hunting opportunity consistent with Objective 1 while maintaining a quality hunting experience, and that's all part of the balance between enough geese to provide good opportunity and not too many geese to cause issues with both producers and municipalities. So as with some other hunter participation numbers, we do have what I would consider an alarming decrease in Canada goose and all waterfowl hunting activity, but Canada goose specifically. This is all seasons, so it's the early fall through the regular season. The number of participants has declined by about a third since 2009. That's about a 3% decline per year. And as you can see, the average bag is staying relatively high. It's still over 7 birds a season. But as you lose that many hunters, it's just really hard to maintain harvest. So if you look at, for instance, the 2009 harvest, we had a similar average bag, but you also had significantly more hunters, and therefore we had nearly 100,000 birds harvested. so that, you know, that multiplier just keeps going down, and I think you have trouble bumping up the average bag much more than it already is, no matter how high the limit is, no matter how many days you hunt. It's just hard to get that average bag to go up, because you can see it's very consistent over the last 10 years, around 7 birds, which coincidentally is often less than the daily bag. So the early fall harvest. Early fall is where we typically see a lot of harvest in South Dakota for the locally produced Canada geese. That's a time when before the main migration of other Canada geese into the state, we generally have a lot of hatchier birds around, and they're starting to group up, and we usually get a really good harvest. Again, we've had a 56% reduction in early fall participation since 2009, and a coincidental very high reduction in harvest. Again, the average season bag is staying relatively stable. We've had some years where it's bumped up a little bit, but again, it's about 7 birds for early fall, and 7 to 8, and we're down to under 3,000 participants, which is going to impact our ability to manage the population. If the population does increase, which frankly, with the water situation we have, I don't see how it can't. So, strategy 2F, which is extremely important to this population management and monitoring, is our banding program. And starting in 2012, we started a pretty intensive banding program in South Dakota. It was initially kind of a pilot with Central Flyway. A bunch of states in the Central Flyway agreed to do several years of banding. Most states have continued, including South Dakota. Our goal or quota each year is 1,500 geese. As you can see, we've banded almost 13,500 geese since 2012. So it's a very, very large effort. And kudos to the regional staff for assisting. And we have had great cooperation really since 2012. So, as you can see, the direct recoveries and the recovery rate has remained relatively consistent. A direct recovery is a bird harvested the same year as banded, and we can get calculate harvest rate by dividing that by the reporting rate, and that's 84% roughly. So that's where you see that harvest rate calculation. And as you can see, harvest rate's remaining relatively high. You know, some of that may be being made up by harvest outside of South Dakota as well. We get a lot of recoveries from Nebraska and Kansas and things like that. So, the banding effort is a really good way to monitor relative harvest rates. And each one of those orange dots is actually a direct recovery from the 2018 bandings. Well, of course, we're still getting 2019 recoveries right now, but the 2018 recovery rates, you can see about as far south of it as they go is Oklahoma. Very rarely we'll get recoveries in northern Texas, but more or less Kansas is kind of the terminus of their migration for the most part. And if you go down to eastern Kansas anytime during the winter, anytime past the first of the year, any municipality you'll see is covered in giant Canada geese. And that's our geese and also all the geese from all up and down the northern part of the flyway wintering in Kansas. And then just to highlight the Unit 2 addition around Sioux Falls, it's a little hard to see, but you can see those dots around the city of Sioux Falls. Those are all recoveries from birds that were banded in 2018 in South Dakota and recovered around Sioux Falls late season. So that Unit 2 season extends to the end of the framework into February around Sioux Falls. And as you can see, we're getting some good harvest and really providing, in my opinion, some really good opportunity that wouldn't be there for the Sioux Falls metro area, and also hopefully trying to manage some of those geese that do winter in the city, because there's way more geese that winter in the city than are produced in the city. You know, we actually do ban a limited number of birds in the city, and you know, some years maybe there's 1,000 birds in the city in the summer, but there might be 10,000, more than 10,000 in the winter. So those are wintering birds from all over the place, including eastern South Dakota. And of course, we do have a very active wildlife damage program with Canada geese. As you can see, our expenditures are relatively low. They're kind of on par where we were about, you know, circa 2000, which is not a bad thing. We had a pretty big spike with a commensurate spike in population in 2012, 2011, kind of that time frame. As you can also see, the index in red on the lower chart and the request for service in black tracked relatively closely, but they did decouple this year, and it's an interesting kind of case study. I think that a lot of that was just due to a lot of acres didn't get planted. And also, the ones that did were planted very late, so a lot of the birds were further developed and more mobile by the time they potentially could have done damage, so they weren't bound to a specific location like they would have been generally. So my anticipation is if we have a normal year next year, that would recouple again. And here's the kind of the crux of the plan, the decision table. And we are currently, like I said, in moderate management, which is highlighted in orange there, which is, 115 to 165,000 is the goal. But in order to trigger a liberal management strategy, it has to be above that threshold for 2 years consecutively. And that takes into consideration things like, slop in the survey. I mean, there can be wonky surveys based on weather and migration and things. So it's an attempt to reduce regulatory flip-flop back and forth and back and forth to liberal to moderate. But if we do get into another year of higher breeding population index, we will be in that liberal management strategy. Any questions on that before I go into our multi-species banding?
In that Sioux Falls Metro, Commissioner Olson, isn't that Sioux Falls Metro area, is there designated areas that we've found or cooperated with landowners so that the average Joe can go out and participate in that, or is it kind of a paid-to-play opportunity down there?
Commissioner Olson, that's a great question. I know there's been an effort to secure CHAPs. I don't know how well that's gone, to be honest with you. I would have to talk with regional staff on that, but there's been an effort to secure private land in the area. I just don't know how successful that's been. Any other questions? I'm going to pinch it for Mark Grobejohn here this morning. He's out trying to reduce the light goose population. So, but he put together a few slides to talk about our migratory bird banding program, which again is vital to both Canada goose management as well as our other migratory game birds that are managed on a flyway scale. So I talked a little bit about goose banding. As you can see, these birds were rounded up. They're flightless for roughly 2-3 weeks, and 2 to 3 weeks in the summer, generally in early July, late June, early July, and they're rounded up and aged and sexed and processed and banded and then released. This year we were slightly below quota by about 25 birds. We actually had a tough time finding birds in Region 3 to band because there was a kind of a widespread nesting failure for the second year in a row in Region 3 due to some really late blizzards. Region 4, the birds hadn't initiated yet, so they kind of weathered that a lot better, but we had a lot of egg mortality, at least from what I've observed from goslings on the landscape in Region 3. So we had about 500 adult birds and about 1,000 young banded, roughly. As you can see, we had a pretty widespread banding effort throughout the regions. You'll see a cluster of birds in and around Sioux Falls. Those are all individual small bandings that were done in the suburban and urban areas of Sioux Falls. As for duck banding, we banded just shy of 2,000 birds, which is a really strong effort. Duck banding, of course, is vital, especially for mallards and pintail. And we did very well on both of those this year. We also generally catch large numbers of adult male wood ducks that are molting in South Dakota from all over the continent, which is kind of highlights the importance of our landscape to molting waterfowl in the state as well in the summer. And those are generally caught via rocket net, which if you guys have ever seen a rocket net shoot, it's pretty neat. It's a baited line of corn, rocket-propelled metal, basically giant bottle rockets that propel a net over the top in very short order. We're also doing a reward band study on mallards to try to update reporting rates, and that's being done on a flyway scale if you don't know the reporting rate, you can't calculate harvest rate, and reporting rate is going up and up and up, which everybody's got a smartphone in the blind. So you have to know that number, and it's getting so high that reporting rate or harvest rate is almost approximating recovery rate because they're becoming so close in differentiation. So we had 20 rocket net shoots, which is a pretty good effort per catch per unit effort, I guess, in the Gator Fisheries term. And we're also assisting with a master's student at SDSU doing GSM implants into hatchier mallards, which work on the cellular phone network, and they text you where they're at, basically. And so every morning I can go and see where all my ducks are, which is kind of cool. So there's 80 total. There's 50 in North Dakota and 30 in South Dakota, and they're all being done at the same time, and it's a cooperative study, and we're getting some really neat, interesting information from that right now. Birds are moving, that's for sure. Duck bang locations are all up in Region 4. Generally, we have some kind of traditional banding locations on the Prairie Coteau, and then we went out into Fault County to try to capture some of that new water that recently flooded areas out there to try to get some pintails, which we did almost get 400 pintails this year, which was a good effort. Here's that study I was talking about with Cynthia Anker, who's the master's student. Each one of those green dots is a duck, and that was from earlier this week. You can see we already have some birds at their wintering grounds in Arkansas and Missouri and things like that. So birds are moving in a hurry this year. And I actually checked this yesterday, and North Dakota is basically cleared out, and we have a few more down south right now. So morning dove banding. The third banding that we do is also extremely important, and the reason for that is because there are no surveys for mourning doves anymore. There used to be call count surveys and actual direct counts, and the only population estimate for mourning doves anymore is indirectly through Lincoln estimates through band recoveries. So it's a very important monitoring effort, especially since mourning doves are extremely important in many states, not so much in South Dakota, but many states that are very, very important. So we banned just shy of 1,000 mourning doves. And we are also participating in a similar study doing reward band deployment to try to get reporting rates for mourning doves. These are the banding locations for mourning doves. These are generally every year in the same general vicinity. We do pick up one or two new locations here and there, but again, kudos to the staff that helps out. This is a very wide, far-flung effort, and it couldn't be done without the help of local staff. Questions on banding?
Questions? Mr. Locken.
Yeah, Commissioner Locken here. I keep hearing people ask the question, where are the geese on the Missouri River corridor? Do we ever check that?
We certainly do surveys. We do aerial flights, and I believe the first one was this week. And we also do the midwinter waterfowl survey, which is done every year the first week in January. And that's a really long-range, good data set that we can look at trends for winter distribution of geese. So, yes, we look at goose distribution on the river system, definitely.
So if we return back to the reduced numbers of hunters, which kind of takes us back to all the discussion and the debate we had over non-resident waterfowl hunting. And I mean, there's some people would say this is the reason, others would say that's the reason. And is the department looking at that, trying to figure out why those numbers are reduced, or is there a way to do it? And then I wonder if the department is contacting those that had licenses in the past to try to reactivate them and get them interested again.
So, Commissioner Jensen, we are forming a waterfowl task force. I don't know if that's the official term, but our first meeting is actually Tuesday, and it's going to be focused on R3 efforts, specifically, I believe, along the Missouri River system. And we're also, if you've been familiar with the two-tier waterfowl proposal that is being pursued by us via the flyway system, we are right now developing a survey of lapsed and current duck hunters to try to get their impressions of a two-tiered duck license system. My guess is that would also translate into an effort to look at non-duck hunters as well into the future, but for right now we're looking at current and lapsed duck hunters that have maybe hunted in the past but aren't hunting right now. So yeah, we're certainly trying to look into that, and it's a systemic issue of some kind. It's all user groups, but waterfowl especially is seems to be declining. So thanks, Tony. So a two-tier system would allow you to choose the current framework, which was six ducks, and you'd have all your species restrictions. Mm-hmm. And the second tier, you could choose a three-duck limit that is simply any duck you shoot. But it's a reduced limit, but you don't have to ID your ducks. So we're hoping that maybe would reactivate or recruit some new duck hunters when that is implemented in 2 years.
So the reduction in duck hunting, waterfowl hunting, is not just South Dakota, but
it's region-wide? It's generally, it's definitely flyway-wide. There are a couple states that aren't seeing the declines, but those are generally states that have higher population bases to begin with, like Texas, you know, maybe things like that, where they have more folks coming into the state. But yeah, I mean, I can't think of a state around here where you don't have reductions in waterfowl hunters. It's about 3% a year. We've had since since the late 90s.
It's really not a function of the number of birds either, right? I mean,
no.
There's plenty of waterfowl.
And there's been some, you know, you can certainly see in ducks especially, it used to be that duck stamp sales mirrored populations really closely, and that has totally decoupled. It's similar to what Travis was talking about yesterday, there's not, that relationship of birds and hunters is not tracking as it used to. So.
Yes, Secretary Hippler.
Great report, Rocco, as always. I just want to give you a little bit of an update. We talked, you know, the two-tier system that you were discussing, we call it the three-splash rule for something a little bit simpler, but we had a lot of discussions. The governor's shown a lot of interest in that. In fact, she made a direct phone call to the Secretary of Interior and expressed her interest in having South Dakota be a state to have that implemented in. So we followed up, went through the system. Rocco's instrumental in that. Tony, you were involved in that system. The last discussion we had was at the Rules Committee in early October. After that, when people asked me how come I wasn't at the roundup and how come I wasn't, you know, at the governor's hunt, I was involved. The last one, I had a chance to talk to Secretary Bernhardt for half an hour, and one of the primary discussions about chronic wasting disease was around the three-splash rule. And the secretary gave me his assurances this will be in place a year from now. Mm-hmm. And then I went down and had a chance to talk an hour with Margaret, who is the principal deputy director of Fish and Wildlife Service. And Margaret gave me the same assurance. And as we're walking out the door, Jerome was in the hallway, and Jerome was the assistant director of migratory birds. And he told me the same thing. So they heard it loud and clear, because the concern was that they're just going to go do so many studies and nothing's going to come out the other side. But I had assurance from complete leadership that isn't going to happen. So a lot of is give credit to Rocco, to you, Tony, and certainly to the governor making that phone call is very instrumental. So, and Secretary Bernhardt said the things you're discussing, Gary. He's talking about, you know, we have social science work that shows its complexity of regulations and access. And we're certainly going to look at our regulations. They've done it on the interior side. They reduced their regulations of refuges by 44%, trying to make it easier for the average person to understand, trying to make it, you know, those barriers are right there, some of the stuff that Andy and, you know, John are working on, the same type of ideas that the commission has been working on. So, you know, they've been good partners in this. I think it's great work. And I think it's going to show the country that you can really do this, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Questions, comments?
Thank you very much.
Thank
good
you.
Report.
Whoop.
Sorry, Commissioner Locken.
You know, I'm sure you can pick up your phone and watch where our ducks and geese are going as they're going south. Can you pick up your phone and look at where the North Dakota geese are that they've banded in North Dakota or up in Canada?
So, Commissioner Locken, we can't see where banded birds are, you know, at any given time. Just the implanted birds that have a GSM implant. We can go back and look at distribution of band recoveries through time, but not in real time. Like it's a you know, a lag of a year or so. But yeah, we can look at distribution of band recoveries for sure.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you very much. Should we do like